You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host Louise and today we are looking at some legal English grammar. Yes, it's time for the subjunctive. But why? Why the subjunctive? Well, in the last podcast episode, I mentioned a phrase in the subjunctive. It was, I recommend an order be made for costs. And so this week I will attempt to explain how the subjunctive is formed, when we use it and why, so that you can use it like a pro. Last week we also introduced some new features to the podcast pro material, which should be helpful for legal English teachers. It's the ability to download and print the word lists so you can use them in class. If you're not a Podcast Pro member, don't forget you can sign up for a free trial at studylegalenglish.com/podcast-pro. So let's get started. If you are studying or have studied a language, you will know that there are tenses and there are moods. Different tenses are used according to whether we are speaking about firstly, the past. For example, last week I advised him about the merger. Secondly, the present. I normally advise this client. Or thirdly, the future. For example, I will advise the new client. On the other hand, mood shows the way in which we would like to express something. We use, firstly, the indicative for assertions to express facts. For example, he works hard. Secondly, the subjunctive for desires, possibilities, and things contrary to fact. For example, I recommend that he work harder. And thirdly, imperatives for commands. For example, work harder. The subjunctive is quite common in languages. I can speak about Italian and Portuguese because these are the languages that I speak, or at least try to speak. In Italian, it's known as the congiuntivo, and Portuguese, it's also known as the congiuntivo or subjunctivo. However, in modern British English, the subjunctive is rarely used, and when it is used, it's reserved for very formal situations. You should note that it's actually more common in American English than British English. In fact, in British English, we tend to avoid it if we can. And yet, when we come to legal English, we know that things are a little bit different. I'm sorry to say, my dear listeners, that as lawyers, you probably should learn how to understand and use the English subjunctive, because not only is it a mark of an educated speaker, but it can also be very effective in persuasive discourse, both in writing and spoken language. And we know that lawyers need to persuade people, from judges in court cases to the opposition when negotiating contracts. An important point to make, though, is that this is quite an advanced level of speaking, and so I would say only use it if you are at a high level, because if you get it wrong, it will sound a bit weird and it could confuse people. So firstly, let's look at how we form the subjunctive. The subjunctive is formed with the simple form of a verb, also known as the bare infinitive, which is the infinitive without the to. For example, do, go, be, instead of to do, to go, to be. We use this base form for all subjects. For example, I pay, you pay, he pay, we pay, you pay, they pay. You can see that the subjunctive is very similar to the present simple indicative, except that in the present simple regular verb conjugations in the indicative, we normally add an S to the third person singular subject, for example, he, she, it pays. And in the subjunctive, we do not add the S. We use the base form for all subjects. Let's go straight ahead and practice. I'm going to read the first part of a sentence and you finish it with the correct subjunctive ending for the subject. I'll begin with an example for you to copy. I. It is important that I pay the legal fees. You. It is important that you. It is important that you pay the legal fees. He, she, it. It is important that he. Pay the legal fees. It is important that he pay the legal fees. We. It is important that we. Pay the legal fees. It is important that we pay the legal fees. You. It is important that you. Pay the legal fees. It is important that you pay the legal fees. They. It is important that they. Pay the legal fees. It is important that they pay the legal fees. You can see that the subjunctive is barely noticeable. In fact, it's really only noticeable with the third person singular because it is missing the S. We said it is important that he pay the legal fees instead of it is important that he pays the legal fees. Wow, it really is that simple. What were we so scared of? But, what about irregular verbs? Well, irregular verbs are more noticeable in the subjunctive because, of course, the conjugations in the indicative are more varied. But the formation of the subjunctive, as with the regular verbs, is, of course, still the same. And, well, we must admit, it is quite simple. We take the base form of the verb and use that with each subject. Let's look at the verb to be. So, what is the base form? You've got it. Be. So, we use this base form for all subjects. So, instead of I am, you are, he, she, it is, we are, you are, they are, we have I be, you be, he be, you be, they be. Wow. Well, you sure can notice the difference here. It sounds a bit strange, right? Well, with these, we really can tell that we're using the subjunctive. Let's give some examples and you should repeat the sentence that I say after the beep. I. It is important that I be there. You. It is important that you be there. He, she, it. It is important that he be there. We. It is important that we be there. You. It is important that you be there. They. It is important that they be there. Great. So now we know how to form it. Let's move on to when we use the subjunctive. So firstly, we can call this the first use. We use the subjunctive when we want to emphasize that something is important, unimportant, desirable or undesirable, and it can be helpful for lawyers in court, in negotiations or when advising clients in order to politely express commands and statements of necessity. Sentences are normally formed by using a phrase ending with the word that, followed by the subjunctive. Phrases include I, you, he, we, you, they advise that, recommend that, request that, and It is crucial that, it is essential that, and other similar phrases. I'm going to give you some examples which suggest a course of action, and you can repeat after the beep. I advise that the tenant gain the landlord's consent to assign the lease. I advise that the tenant gain the landlord's consent to assign the lease. The seller recommends that the buyer sign the contract. The seller recommends that the buyer sign the contract. You could, in these instances, use the present indicative, although it's not strictly grammatically correct, but many British speakers do this. In this case, we would say, I advise that the tenant gains the landlord's consent to assign the lease, or the seller recommends that the buyer signs the contract for the sale of goods. If we want to say something a little stronger in order to give a polite command or to show importance, we could say the following sentences, which you should repeat after the beep. My client requests that this court grant her leave to appeal. My client requests that this court grant her leave to appeal. It is crucial that he redraft this clause, taking into account applicable law. It is crucial that he redraft this clause, taking into account applicable law. It is essential that the appellant attend the hearing. It is essential that the appellant attend the hearing. So, moving on, we still use this base form for the subjunctive, even if the first verb is in the past or future. So, I'm going to read some sentences and you can repeat after the beep. I advised that the tenant gain the landlord's consent to assign the lease. I will advise that the tenant gain the landlord's consent to assign the lease. So, what about if we want to give a negative sentence? To make a negative sentence, we place the word not before the subjunctive form. So, I'm going to read some sentences and you repeat after the beep. The seller recommends that the buyer not sign the contract. The seller recommended that the buyer not sign the contract. The seller will recommend that the buyer not sign the contract. And what about the continuous? Well, we can actually use the continuous with the subjunctive, although it has virtually the same meaning as using the present subjunctive. So I'm going to read a sentence and you repeat after the beep. It is essential that you be waiting for the trustee when he arrives. But here, as I mentioned, we could actually just use the present subjunctive. It is essential that you wait for the trustee when he arrives. And what about the passive voice? As we know, English lawyers love to use the passive voice. Normally, we form an active sentence with a subject plus a verb and an object. For example, the lawyer advises his client. The lawyer here is the subject, who is doing the verb, The verb is advises. The lawyer, the subject, is doing the verb, which is to advise. And the object is the thing which is having the verb done to them. In this case, it's the client who is being advised. With the passive tense, the subject and the object change places. We form it with object plus the verb to be in the correct conjugation, plus the verb in the past participle, and then we add by and then the subject. For example, instead of the lawyer advises his client, we get the client is advised by the lawyer. Let's see if you can change an active subjunctive sentence into the passive subjunctive sentence. So I'm going to read an active subjunctive sentence and I want you to try to change it into the passive subjunctive sentence after the beep. The lawyer urged that the court dismiss the action. Did you get it? Well, I'll give you the answer. The passive subjunctive sentence would be, the lawyer urged that the action be dismissed by the court. Sometimes we omit the last part, so we might just say, the lawyer urged that the action be dismissed. So here you can see that the only difference between the indicative passive and the subjunctive passive is that instead of conjugating the verb to be according to the subject, instead we just basically use the base form be, the subjunctive form. So let's move on to the next usage, usage two. Another usage of the subjunctive is what we call the past subjunctive, although it doesn't refer to the past. In fact, it really refers to hypothetical situations. We use it after words like if, wish, as though, suppose, unless. And the only verb where we notice the difference in the subjunctive instead of just using the indicative past is the verb to be, which is changed to were for all subjects. When I was researching the subjunctive in preparation for this podcast episode, I came across an article by Professor Lisa Maisie from the US University of Marquette, and her blog post is entitled Revisiting the Subjunctive Mood, Great for Persuasion. Here she explains why lawyers can and should be using the subjunctive in this persuasive way. And she imagines a scenario in which you are presenting an argument in court. I'm going to read a little extract from her blog. She says, if you have to argue in the alternative, you can use the subjunctive mood to subtly indicate your doubt about a position. For example, let's say you have just concluded one part of an argument that, in your view, should end the case. Yet, you need to address the alternative. At some point, you could write, if the court were to hold for defendant, there would be no justice for injured plaintiffs. You see the subjunctive at work here because the conjugated verb to be does not match the subjunctive this court. We'd normally consider this court was as the grammatically correct form. By using the subjunctive, though, the writer is able to show her doubt that the court will in fact hold for the other side. It's subtle, but it can be effective. That's the end of the extract from that blog post. Just a note, Maisie uses the word plaintiff, which in British legal English is known as the claimant after the Civil Procedure Rules 1998, which I spoke about in the last podcast episode. In US English, however, the term plaintiff is still used, and to confuse you even more, the term will be used in UK TV series and court cases predating the civil procedure rules. Let's look at some more examples of the subjunctive in this way. Let's imagine you are cross-examining a witness about evidence they've already given and which you consider to be false. You could say, Remembering that perverting the course of justice is a common law offence, carrying a maximum sentence of life imprisonment, if I were you, I would think twice about giving any incorrect answers here. Here, the subjunctive is used when I said, if I were you, to show that in a hypothetical situation where you were somehow the witness, you would tell the truth, which in turn highlights your doubt as to whether the witness is indeed giving truthful answers, and it draws the witness's attention to the importance of answering your questions truthfully. Let's listen to another example which highlights your doubt that a defendant is telling the truth. Okay, let's suppose, just for a moment, that he were telling the truth, at least, perhaps, about the weapon. It still would not prove his innocence. In this example, you are taking the judge and jury through a thought experiment, imagining a hypothetical situation. Through the tone of your voice and belittling the hypothetical situation, you are highlighting that this hypothetical situation really is not true. Or in other words, that you really don't believe that the defendant is telling the truth. Outside of court, this technique can, of course, be used in negotiation. Let's imagine you are negotiating a purchase and sale agreement of a company. This company is facing a potential lawsuit which you doubt will ever take place, and you also doubt that if this did take place, that the value of the company would be at risk. You could say something like, okay, let's just suppose for a moment that even after mediation, the other side were to proceed with legal action. In any case, it's highly unlikely that the other side would win. Here, by using the subjunctive along with other phrases such as even and in any case, and using a particular tone of voice, you highlight your doubt as to the importance of the potential lawsuit. So, let's do a quick recap. First of all, let's look at forming the subjunctive. We form the subjunctive by, first of all, changing was to were, changing am, is, and are to be, and by dropping the final S from the third person singular form of regular verbs, for example, orders becomes order for every subject. And when do we use it? Well, we use it after that in certain phrases. For example, I recommend that, I request that, it's necessary that, and after if, wish, though, phrases like that. And why do we use it? Well, we use it to express an opinion, possibility, or an unreal situation, and it can be particularly helpful for lawyers who want to persuade or dissuade someone. So that's the end of today's episode where we've looked at the subjunctive. There are lots of exercises to practice what we learned today for Podcast Pro members because I understand it's probably been a little bit confusing. Don't worry, it is really straightforward. So what I suggest is that if you've signed up and you're a Podcast Pro member, head over to studylegalenglish.com/episode43 to practice. And then you will completely get the subjunctive. Today, you might have noticed that I've been speaking faster than normal because a listener commented that the podcast pace could speed up a bit. If you agree or if you have other comments, for example, questions about the subjunctive, remember you can always send me an email at info@studylegalenglish.com or message me on our Facebook or Twitter page, and of course I will try to get back to you and answer your questions. So, thank you for listening and see you next time.